sinners have their sorrow, the wretched have their rage. Pray for the aged, it's the dawn of another age, of another age, of another age, of another age, of another age.
Hello, welcome to Radio Free Kanata. I am your host, Kevin Annett. Welcome back. We're here every Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern Time at BBS Radio Network. This is the continued saga of a struggle to establish the rule of law and justice in Canada. And today we're going to be talking about a simple topic. I've entitled it, When the Killers Conduct the Autopsy, Don't Expect the Truth. Canada evades its genocidal legacy to mask its ongoing crimes. We're going to talk about that. But before we get to that, I do want to remind people to follow our work at itccs.org and kanatarepublic.ca. This is the voice of the Provisional Government of the Republic of Canada, established lawfully under common law on January 15th of this year. And to put in a little plug, which, of course, one of the mundane aspects of life is that we need funds to operate, this program costs slightly over $250 a month to operate, and we need your donations. This is your voice. We need your input as to the program content and your involvement, but we also need your help financially to keep it going. So if you can donate, any amount will help every month. Consider making monthly pledges. That would be fantastic. And you can send a donation care of PayPal at the tribunal website, itccs.org. Just look up in the upper right corner. You'll see the PayPal button. Thank you. Now, I want to welcome my co-host, Ryan. Hi, Ryan. Welcome back again.
Hey, Kevin. How are you doing today?
I'm doing really well. And I'm looking forward to the show today because it's really getting down to the kind of the meat of what often we're dealing with, the news that broke this week coming out of Canada.
The TRC?
That's right, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Now, you know, the way I've kind of described this is whenever the winners of a war get to write the history and they get to absolve themselves, the results are not only tragic but comical. And when this TRC, when it released its official report, people don't realize that this entire thing was a fraud from the very beginning. Let me just give you two examples of why that is. When the TRC was set up, it was appointed by the very churches and government that was being investigated. So this is like the accused getting to appoint the judge and jury. The TRC was appointed by the government, and their three commissioners were approved by the churches that ran these Indian residential schools that were being investigated. And the second point, of course, is that the court record itself was heavily censored, that whenever anyone gave testimony before the TRC, they couldn't mention names, they couldn't mention crimes, or it was deleted from the court record. So imagine what kind of verdict you get at the end of the day when the court record cannot say anything bad about the accused. I mean, it was insane. You know?
So it's an official report that's essentially been sanitized.
Totally sanitized, and not only sanitized, but it's officially sanitized. If you go to, I don't know if the website is still up, but it's trc.ca. If you look in Section 2, it says very clearly that the commission has no mandate to issue subpoenas. It cannot conduct criminal investigations. It can only hear stories, but those stories cannot relate to criminal matters. Well, I mean, we're talking about residential schools where tens of thousands of children died and were tortured to death. You know, it's mind-boggling, really.
Well, who set up the TRC? I know that the judges were essentially appointed by the Anglican, Catholic, and United Church of Canada, but whose idea was it to establish this in the first place?
Well, it's very interesting, the history, and I'm actually going to publish this week kind of the timeline on this. The TRC wasn't mentioned until an incident happened, and it was the same month that we were, our relatively small movement, at the time it was called the Friends and Relatives of the Disappeared. This was myself and really a handful of Aboriginal and white people in Vancouver and Toronto in Canada that were holding protests. For years we had been documenting these crimes, trying to get the interest of people, being totally ignored by the media. We began to occupy churches in the year 2007 and 2008, and these occupations made the headlines. You know, Natives Disrupt Mass on Easter, those kind of headlines. And right after we produced our documentary film, Unrepentant. This would have been in January 2007. Now, this documentary, if people want to look at it, it's at hiddennolonger.com. This was the only documentary that had ever described some of the very gruesome, you know, killings and experimentation programs and other things, clearly pointing to genocide that had gone on in these residential schools. You know, eyewitnesses and everything telling their story, backed up by all the documents proving these enormous death rates. Well, once that film got out, it went viral all over the internet, and one of the people who saw it was a native member of parliament, a Cree elder called Gary Morasty from Saskatchewan. Gary Morasty, in April 2007, right after these church occupations were hitting the headlines, Gary Morasty gets up in parliament and says to Jim Prentice, the Indian Affairs Minister, when are we going to bring those children home for a proper burial? And the same day, as a matter of fact, actually was within 24 hours, Prentice comes back and announces that the government is going to set up a commission to look for those missing children. Those were his words. As a matter of fact, he said, if my children were missing, I'd want to know what happened to them. Interestingly, Jim Prentice, within a few months, was bumped out of that portfolio. Gary Morasty resigned from Parliament, and the Ottawa Sun reporter who broke the story also got bumped. So they did kind of a house cleaning after that. But on the basis of that, that's how the TRC arose. But as it developed, the whole issue of the missing children got forced more and more into the background, until it finally vanished. And now they're putting out this ludicrous story that only 3,000 or 4,000 children died. In order for that to happen, there would have only had to be 50 deaths every year in 100 residential schools. So in other words, every year a kid died in every second school is what they're trying to convince us. I mean, it's just enormous Holocaust denial.
Right, which doesn't really necessarily make it about a cultural genocide as much as it makes it about some type of negligence in the communities, right?
Exactly, and that's a very good point. They use the, as you know, as an expert on this matter, Ryan, you know how language is used to kind of control people's feelings and attitudes about this. And this story has hit the media all over the world. I noticed it was on page 5 of the New York Times, cultural genocide in Canada. They never say the word genocide. It's always prefixed by this adjective cultural, so people can go, oh, you mean you stop them from speaking their language? Well, I mean, that happens to everybody. How is that a serious thing? And then people go back to sleep. But, you know, it's Holocaust denial to say that level of killing and death is somehow equated with, you know, just losing your language or something. I mean, it's absurd.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, of course, the language plays a huge part in it, because by changing the language and by issuing an official report, it gives people this notion that the authorities did something about it, they recognized it, and that there's no reason for people like us to talk about it anymore. But what I see is reports like the TRC, what they've done is not only whitewash the whole situation, they've used this sensitized form of language to confuse people and keep them ill-informed, misinformed. What it also does is that it takes the present-day crimes and it kind of pushes them off to the side as well, because of the past, nothing really happened that bad, nothing's really happening today. So it kind of whitewashes the past and the present at the same time. They kind of kill two birds with one stone, if you will.
Oh, exactly. And that's a very important point for our show, because the whole movement to establish a republic grows out of the fact that citizens are obligated under international law not to pay taxes to or obey the laws of a convicted criminal regime like Canada. So we have to create an alternative now. We don't have any choice in the matter, really, if we're to be moral, lawful people. And the ongoing crimes include things like the massive trafficking of Aboriginal children, the murder of reserve Indians all the time to get their lands and resources. There's a thing called Agenda 21, where there's a global plan to exterminate 90% or more of indigenous people by the mid-century, finally resolve this whole thing all over the world. All of this ongoing genocide, like you say, is masked and by this kind of TRC cover-up.
Yeah, it is. I've done a lot of research on Agenda 21 in particular, and Agenda 21 has kind of actually been displayed a lot in popular culture and actually in a lot of teenage and kids' movies, kind of get people to kind of buy along with this plan to take native land all over the world, too. And it's all about a form of desensitizing people to the notion that when the governments come in to try to take that land, that it's a good thing, that they're doing it for public interest. And they don't ever obviously show the fact that people are slaughtered in the process, literally and figuratively, having their lives destroyed, right, in so many more ways than one.
Well, exactly. Exactly, and I want to bring in our other participants into the discussion now, but just before I do that, I want to, this is a very key point, because there's catchwords they use, and the code word in this global extermination of indigenous people is called sustainability. It came up out of the United Nations in the 1970s. Sustainability means, well, we've just got too many people. We've got to get rid of a lot of them. It's a code word for depopulation, which is really what is behind all the sterilization, the pharmacological assault on people. The fact that over half of all Native people in North America have, at some point, faced sterilization. 90% of the women in Puerto Rico sterilized under these UN programs. It's all part of the same thing. So I want to get into that in the discussion because it's very relevant. Let me just ask if Dan and Jonathan and Laurie are with us at all, and Karen.
Hi, Kevin. How's it going? Jonathan here.
Hi, Jonathan. I wanted to involve you guys as well in this because, you know, what part B of this whole discussion is, well, taking action within Canada now against these convicted criminal bodies. You guys in London are doing excellent work at confronting the Anglican Church. There are two convicted officers, Bob Bennett and Fred Hiltz of the Anglican Church, who have destroyed records and evidence about their church's killing of children at the Anglican residential schools, especially the one in Brantford, the Mushhole. And let me just ask you if you have any comments about, you know, that work and the response you've been getting in the community to, you know, some of the leafleting and other campaigning on this that you've been doing. Are you there, Jonathan?
Oh, yeah, well, really, so I guess, like, when we went out doing the leafleting, it was really just putting it up on the boards and everything that was on the sides of the streets there. So it wasn't really as much the leafleting being a directly one-on-one contact. There was a few people that we did do that with, and some people, they were interested in looking at it. Some were also, I don't know, interested in going their own way, which is the case with a lot of people. But, yeah, even after, like, after we had put them up on the poles the next day, those leaflets, they were taken down. So it didn't really seem like it was getting too much publicity, like it was being allowed to. So that's what was really our experience with the leafleting doing that.
Yeah, I'm finding, you know, often, I don't know what your experience is, but, you know, whenever you talk to ordinary people about this, there's such a deep-bedded denial about it. You know, I have to often read the names of the children who died, because let's not lose sight of the issue here. We're talking tens of thousands of children who were beaten to death or starved or killed in various gruesome ways. I just started listing the names and the ages and how these children died, and it makes it more real for people when you can put a face on this. Are you finding that when you talk to people about this stuff?
It is kind of a little harder. It is a little kind of harder to put a face on it, really, when you don't really have much natives there out with you supporting you, really. So I don't really know. It's kind of hard to really put a face onto it. That's what I've tried and been experiencing myself.
Yeah. Dan, are you with us?
Yes, I am, yeah.
Hi. Hi, Dan.
How are you doing?
Good. Now, you know, we've been covering this whole thing of the TRC. Do you have any thoughts on what's been happening with this whole thing?
Well, I think the whole thing is just a complete whitewash and a scam. What they've released in the media, Sinclair, the highest number that I've heard, many different numbers, but the highest number that I've heard is 6,000 children, when we all know in reality it's approximately 50,000 children that were exterminated in these schools. And it's just a complete whitewash, and they're hiding behind the cultural genocide word. Basically, they're just trying to make it look as though we stole their language, right? And they're totally skirting around the fact that they were a systematic killing machine, and that's the whole reason that the schools were even there in the first place, was to wipe out the indigenous culture and the indigenous people so that we could steal their land from them. And there's absolutely no accountability at all that has come from the TRC. Absolutely nobody has been held accountable. The government's not going to be held accountable. The churches aren't going to be held accountable. The people that murdered these students are not going to be held accountable. So now it's up to us, the public, to hold the government accountable, because they've made it very, very blatant that they are not going to do anything about it at all. So I think that that's what we need to work together with, together as a team to try and hold these people accountable for the crimes that they've committed.
Well, you know, that to give an example of that, Murray Sinclair, who, for people who don't know, he is the native puppet who was appointed as Canadian government often does this very well. They put a native front on something to make it look legitimate. This guy's a former judge from Manitoba, and he made the lie that he said the government stopped publishing residential school death records in 1920. Very odd claim to make, since I've been finding government death records right up to the year 1969, and I've been sending them to the TRC and to others, so he's lying right out of the side of his mouth there. But the point is, in Canada, they can get away with that because of the structure of things, and this is why we need the Republic and new court system, because here's an example. The Supreme Court Justice, Beverly McLachlan, she's the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. She's also a member of the Privy Council, which is the inner cabinet that runs the government. So the courts, just like in the old British colonial system, they're the hand puppet of the ruling party. And they're all working for the same team. So Beverly McLachlan, about a week before the TRC report comes out, makes a statement that is just mimicking Murray Sinclair, saying, yes, cultural genocide was committed, and now it's being resolved, basically. It shows the courts in Canada are completely useless. And as a matter of fact, they're complicit in this because year after year we took this evidence. I was involved in three or four different lawsuits where we attempted to charge Canada and the Crown and these churches with genocide. And every single time the judges threw it out, saying the issue of the Crown's complicity in a crime was ultra vires, which means it's outside their authority to rule on. So, you know, we find this with the Children's Aid Society stuff, too. Whenever you find the system caught in crime, the courts just back up the system. And that's why we need these common law courts.
And, Kevin, how long have you been exposing this? Decades, right?
It began for me when I went to Port Alberni in 1992, the very first home I visited as a United Church minister. They told me a story of their best friend being killed in the residential school. That was in August 1992, and ever since then, you know, it's amazing how things don't change, because the attitude now is like it was back then. It's like, we didn't do anything wrong. This is kind of an unfortunate thing that a few people did to Indians, and now we're ignoring it. It's like this vast inertia when a system, well, it doesn't have to admit. They won the war. We won the war. We don't have to admit anything. We run the system. That's why the only way you're going to get justice is if you have a new system. I mean, the Nuremberg trials happened to the losers, right? It's as if
that's right.
I often say to people, let's say Nazi Germany had won the war, which in a way they did. Read Jim Mars's book called The Fourth Reich, and you'll see what I mean.
Absolutely. Yeah, I had Jim Mars on my show before, and if you break it down, it ties in exactly with what you're talking about today, Agenda 21, population control, sterilization.
Imagine the Nazis had won World War II, you know, and eventually they would do a commission into the death camps and find that, yes, that's unfortunate, a few people died because of a few bad guards. You have exactly what's going on now in Canada, and the only way you can try a system is to get a new system, and that's why we're talking about the Republic. So, I wanted to ask the folks from London, you know, one of the issues that has come up recently, and we get this all over the country, people engaged in trying to hold on to their children. The Children's Aid Society, it's like the Canada Revenue Agency, which is another corrupt or agency defrauding people of their tax money. It's nationally not even based in Canada. It's a foreign-based corporation. And so when we talk about the CS seizing children, you literally have a foreign power coming in and taking, kidnapping children to traffic them. That's what's going on. Do you get this? I wanted to, Jonathan or Dan, to kind of relate this to the struggles people are facing right now with the CAS. Do you find people are opening to another alternative than simply, well, you know, write to your MP or get a lawyer? I mean, are people open? You mentioned the other day, Dan, people are talking revolution now. Are you sensing that?
Yeah, that definitely seems to be the tone of the crowd at all the protests that we've been going to lately, is that people are sick of voting for the lesser of three evils. It's just everybody realizes that it does absolutely no good because the system is so far gone and so broken that we cannot fix the system within the system anymore, and that the system needs to fall. The whole system needs to collapse, and we need to institute a new government, the Republic of the People, where the people are involved in the administration of the judicial system. The people need to be more involved in absolutely every aspect of the government. The only way we can ever keep a government from not being corrupt is for the citizens to be running it at all levels of government.
Right.
I think that people are just seeing that all the blatant crimes that are being committed by the government nowadays are just being whitewashed and nobody's doing anything about them and no accountability is there whatsoever. And that people are just sick and tired of it and they're ready for change. I think that it's definitely the time is ripe for revolution, I believe.
Yeah, and if an issue of the mass murder of children doesn't wake people up, I don't know what will. Or the continued trafficking of children.
It almost seems like, and I hate to throw the word out there, but it seems a bit racist of the Canadian people, right? If it was 50,000 white children that went missing and were murdered, there would be hell to pay. There'd be like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it wouldn't be this whitewash that was going on. People would be getting their asses nailed to the wall for it.
Yep. Well, it's interesting, too, you know, like this stuff has been around so long. Ryan, you asked me how long I've been at this. Year after year, decade after decade, really, we held protests, we documented the crime, we worked with survivors, we occupied churches, you know, and even in the Royal Commission on Aboriginal People, this is a Royal Commission sponsored by the government. It publishes this report in 1996, and in it, it stated that they quote Duncan Campbell Scott, the superintendent of Indian Affairs, quote, here's a quote from him, 50% of the children who pass through these Indian schools do not live to benefit from the education which they had received therein, unquote. That's the top official saying half the children are dying, and yet Murray Sinclair now says, no, it's more like 3 or 4%. I mean, you see what they get away with when the criminals are in charge.
Well, they love to use statistics, too. They'll just slice and dice apart what they want to use as evidence, and then they'll just kind of put everything else back on the shelf, and they'll use whatever evidence they've kind of created to go along with their truth that they're trying to promote through their reports. It's not another way that the truth is completely, completely whitewashed.
That's right.
And Kevin, I also wanted to add that, you know, since you've been doing this for decades, and this does all tie in going back to Nazi Germany and before, a lot of these eugenics programs, even after the war, you mentioned that the Nazis didn't necessarily lose the war, and that's very true. As a matter of fact, a lot of top officials not only came to Argentina, the U.S., parts of Canada, and parts of Russia, and they actually operated different banks, and they operated different organizations, pharmaceutical companies, and all this gets tied in together with what's going on in the modern day. And if you start to look at it and you realize what's happened and you see all these different connections worldwide, it's about genocide in Canada. It's about global genocide in and of itself. And that becomes a much bigger picture where I think it should have everybody up in arms about what's going on, because it's not just one little small piece of the world. It's the entire planet that's being run by these people that are trying to do this, especially to children, and that makes it even a little bit more close to home for people, and I think that's why they kind of reject the information until it comes right to their front door, and it knocks on the door, then they realize what's happening. But with that being said, what do we do now with this new report that's come out, the TRC, and we know it's a whitewash? What do we do? How do we react to this?
Well, I know what I'm going to do with it. It's ass wipe. Anyway, you know, this is what I hope in the second half of the show we can talk about, not just understanding what's happened, but how we are going to turn this around and actually, like I mentioned earlier, show people that we are on lawful ground to say the Crown and Canada is null and void because it's a criminal body and you are not obligated to fund or support criminals in power. When the whole system is criminal by nature, you have an obligation not to support that system, and that's in the two things in our international law. That's in the Nuremberg legal statutes of 1950, at our international law, the UN conventions, and the Rome statute of 1998 that actually urges citizens to disassociate themselves from their own governments when they're engaged in war crimes, and that's exactly what this is, war crimes.
Now, Kevin, I want to ask you also about the Canadian revenue. Is it kind of like the internal revenue here in the United States? It's kind of an offshore corporate entity that works outside of the government.
That's exactly what it is. It's it's like you find this often in Canada, especially there are things called crown corporations, they are in fact private companies, but with a governmental label on them. But you know, it's the same kind of private thing. There's this triangle that went on. If you look at the history of genocide, the church, corporate interests, and the government. There was a famous case of an Indian agent on the West Coast called Harry Gallaud. He ran the local lumber company. He was the Indian agent, and he was also the Anglican missionary. And he acted like the judge. He set up private courts, and you could try Indians if they spoke their own language and stick them away in jail. So it's like private, like corporate, government, church, mafia all together. And that's really still what's going on. I wanted to ask, is anybody else on the line? Like, Lori, are you on now? Anybody? Just wanted to check. Okay. So let's go into that more. If we could talk a little bit about that. For people listening, a lot of this stuff is there's so much of it that it's hard to summarize. So I want to urge any new listener to go to our websites and read this stuff for yourself. Our voluminous evidence about genocide in Canada is up at itccs.org. If you look up at the top, you'll see. The common law court case number one, genocide in Canada. If you go on there, there's 3.5 hours of videotapes and documentation, eyewitnesses, and all this stuff proving our case. And one of the pieces of evidence I want to point out, and here's one of the things that nobody in Canada will ever address, why the 40% death rate was present the very first year the schools opened. This is proof of intent to commit genocide, because if people, kids are dying from communicable diseases, it takes a while for those things to spread. The death rate on the Indian reservations in the 1889 out west was about 3 to 4%. In the Indian schools, it was 40 to 45%. So suddenly, these kids die en masse when they come into the Indian schools the year it opens. That's obviously they're being exposed to something. That isn't just some kind of random bug going around. And that death rate stays constant over decades. Okay.
Yeah, well, that's even more proof right there, the fact that it stays constant over several decades in the same institutions.
Exactly, because I remember my mother telling me once, she grew up in Winnipeg during the 30s, and she said she remembers a boy in her class came down with tuberculosis, and that kid was taken out of this class the same day and put in a sanatorium, because before penicillin, you isolated people so that the TB bug could go away. You don't die right away from TB. This is a more proof of genocide. This is something people have to burn into their consciousness here when we're talking about genocide. The main cause of massive death, and even the TRC admits this, is the massive tuberculosis that went on. Well, eyewitnesses talk about time and again about the healthy and the sick being locked into the same dorm at night and being kept there, the TB-ridden kids with the healthy, which is something that you didn't do in the white world, only among Indians. But you don't die from tuberculosis right away. It takes months to carry you away. And only after your immune system is being compromised, okay? So why are the children kept in substandard conditions? Poor health, poor food. If they do get any food, often they weren't even fed at all. Cold dormitories, no blankets, constant beatings. The stress of constant rapes and attacks destroys their immune system. That makes them prone to being carried off by TB. So if you want to use TB as a weapon for mass killing, you've got to create the conditions that were in every residential school. And that is more proof of intent to commit genocide right there. The fact that you'd have 50% of them dying off from TB, that wouldn't happen unless it was a created, calculated condition for mass murder. And you know what? You'll never hear this talked about in any academic publication in Canada, on any media, in Parliament, anywhere, because they know it's true.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, I wanted to relate that to the TRC because, like you said, you've been doing this for decades, and this goes back even further, many, many decades before you even uncovered what you did at Port Alberni. And if you look at it, I would think that all the people that have denied it over the years, all the officials who have denied it over the years, call you crazy, call everybody insane that we're making stuff up, then there's an official report done on it, not to address the issues that you've brought to the table, but to kind of whitewash those issues and present an entirely different story, which, in my opinion, is more proof that what you're saying is true, because they officially put this group together to kind of dispute right. What people like you have been saying.
I would love to do a freedom of information thing. They don't have in Canada what you have in the States, where you can actually go and apply to the government for to find out what they have on you, but I would love to see how much money they've spent on just undermining our work. I know it ran in, the United Church spent $250,000 to throw me out. I would love to see how much the government spent on doing all this stuff. You know, it'd be really fascinating.
Oh, yeah, money's not an object. And then, of course, you know, they didn't even have, they said they didn't have money for your food drives you had at the churches, right?
Yeah, they couldn't come up with $800 to keep their food bank going, but they found $250,000 to get rid of me. It was funny. Good old United Church. But, you know, I mean, you're raised in these institutions and you don't understand what's going on. And what I wanted to ask Dan and Jonathan is, you've had contact sometimes with church members. What do you find when you're handing out leaflets and when you're talking to people? I know people have the sanitized version. Oh, yes, some children were harmed and we've apologized and things are better now. But do you find anyone questioning that at all? I mean, how are things in London with that?
Well, it seems to me that most of the members of the church are pretty ignorant of the crimes that the church has committed. The church has done a very good job of concealing it from their parishioners. One example is we went to a march against Monsanto, and at the end of the march, there was some members there from the Anglican Church handing out organic seeds to everybody with little cards about the Anglican Church and information. And I said to them, I was like, did you know that the Anglican Church is heavily invested in Monsanto? And they said that they had no idea. They had never heard of that before, and that they were quite disgusted by the fact that they were. So they do such a good job of hiding absolutely everything that the average person who goes to this church has no idea of the crimes that they've committed.
It makes perfect sense that the Anglican Church would be involved with companies like Monsanto, because the big biotech companies, DuPont, Syngenta, Epicyte, all these companies are involved in a form of global genocide in and of itself, whether it's the elimination of seed sovereignty or the fact that the genetically modified crops are engineered with BT toxins that actually cause your stomach to explode or cause stomach lesions and can cause death, cancer, and a whole bunch of other immune diseases, as well as the biggest one of all, the company Epicyte took the gene, they reversed the gene for male fertilization, they engineered it into the corn, and then they sold that gene patent to Monsanto, and now they manufacture that in corn, so it causes over three generations, which we haven't seen the effects of in the long run, a form of sterilization globally, anybody who's consumed this over at least 15 to 20 years. So that's part of the whole agenda that we're talking about right now. So I just thought I'd throw that in there.
Well, in the church, corporate connection is very strong. Another aspect of this is they're not only into Monsanto, both the Catholic and Anglican and United Churches have a joint investment portfolio. This is one of the things we've learned. They have the same insurance companies, the same corporate investors, and they're heavily influenced in the arms trade. The Church of England in London, the Archbishop of Canterbury was forced to admit last year that they own 40% of a landmine company. The Vatican is 100% owner of the biggest small arms company in the world, Beretta. They make all the small arms, and it's 100% owned by the Catholic Church. I mean, that's what people have to wake up to. We're talking massive, like, corporate institutions here, and their sheep in the pews have no idea of this, and part of our job is to educate them about that, but then do more than educate. Say, you've got to pull out. You've got to leave these false churches, and just like people have got to leave the false thing called Canada. And that's where we come in.
And what else can we do with knowing about, like, let's say that since we know about the TRC and we know what's happened, you know, with this kind of a whitewash that's gone on, how do we apply that to the work that we're doing in terms of what now people are beginning to see? Because they don't believe you for so long, and then, boom, it's admitted even in the mainstream, and then they have the sanitized version of what happened. How does that contribute to the work that we do?
Dan or John, any thoughts about that? I've certainly got some.
Yeah, well, I would have to say that now that they've come out and admitted that they've committed genocide, it just adds fuel to our fire. And it's now time for us to start systematically arresting the people who committed this genocide. We know who they are. We know their names. We know what their involvement is and what they did and how they're still covering it up. They've all been found guilty by an international common law court. And it's time for us, the citizens, to start arresting these people and holding them accountable for the crimes that they've committed against humanity.
Exactly. It's our duty to do that, and we can deputize the police to do that. We do have a common law sheriff training manual at CanadaRepublic.ca. We're getting more and more of a response to this, especially in Ontario. And just so people know, during the summer, July and August especially, we'll be having groups meeting to give people training in citizen arrests and how to do this. And we'll be going to the local police and saying, look, we're going to be doing this. You should help us, because if you don't, you're colluding in a crime. And we want to involve the police in these training workshops and that. So this is something very exciting. It shows that how we take our power back from these criminals. And if people want to follow that, CanadaRepublic.ca, and write to us, republicofcanada@gmail.com. I wanted to make a little plug here, too. There are a lot of you out west who are sympathetic, but you're not coming together the way the folks in the east are. In Ontario and Quebec, we have functioning branches of people. Out west, we've got a lot of people, and maybe it's because of the distance. We've got a lot of people scattered all over the place, but nobody is pulling it together yet, and we need people to volunteer for that. So please step forward now, especially out on the west coast. And, you know, it's interesting because the 28 mass grave sites of these children, half of them are in British Columbia at the 13 residential schools in British Columbia, and the other nearly half are in Ontario. You know, there's a lot of hidden crime out on the West Coast, having lived there a lot of my life. In these small little coastal communities, it's where the children are still being trafficked. It's where these crimes are still going on, and that's where we really need a presence. So I'm really especially imploring to making a plea to the people on the West Coast to get your act together and get on board and organize more actively with the Republic. End of sermon.
And I wanted to add in here a quotation from, I thought it was very, very appropriate, from the United States Declaration of Independence. It says that, but when in a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. And what that essentially means is that those people who have the knowledge, who have the ability, and who have the power to make a change when they know what's going on, they have a responsibility to do that as well.
That's right. And Jonathan, I didn't, did you want to say anything? I know Dan had remarked, but do you have any comments about any of that?
Well, yeah, really everything that we've just been saying, I just think that I don't really think that the mass really know what has really been going on, because even when that was all the TRC was released on the 2nd there, like when I'm at work, we have the radio on 24/7, and I drive back customers, so I talk with like a handful of different people that I guess you would say are from different wavelengths of life, and just when I sort of mentioned it to them, they didn't really have any idea of what the TRC was, or even when we had the radio on, there was maybe a brief minute, basically, of what the TRC was, you know, them admitting to cultural genocide. But then, ironically, on the exact same day, they apparently decided to go ahead and pass a legislation for distracted driving, which was just another, like, just really distract everyone. Like, they just really trumped up all these fines, so that's all that was on the radio. Like, they had on the broadcast, their radio broadcast, just basically, like, I don't know, maybe like a half hour just on that new legislation, and they weren't even talking about anything that happened in the TRC. So it's just ironic that they still basically try to use something else to avoid it from being mass media, right? So it's quite ironic, but it's what else could you expect?
I thought it was interesting, too, at the TRC forums, how any victims or witnesses were given only about 10 minutes to give their comments, and their comments were obviously having to be submitted prior to by the directors of the TRC, and then church officials got basically as much time as they wanted to say whatever they wanted to say. I thought that was very interesting and spoke a lot about what the TRC really was.
Oh, it's a total miscarriage.
Well, if somebody had even mentioned the name of anybody who had murdered a child or abused a child, it was stricken from the record as well.
That's right. It says that in the roof. Oh, hi. Hi, Lori. Do you have anything to add?
Hi. Well,
yeah,
I've got the mandate open here, and I mean, Section 2 of the mandate on the official TRC website, right? Section 2 of the mandate says establishment, powers, duties, and procedures of the commission. And it says, right, the first thing it says, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission shall be established by the appointment of the commissioners by the federal government. through an order in council. Okay. And then we've got B is very simple. It says, the commission shall not hold formal hearings, nor act as a public inquiry, nor conduct any legal process.
Well, there you go.
And then it says, and then it says in F, now check this out, everybody, listen, it says, it's just here as plain as day, right? We are protecting the perpetrators. It says, the commissioners shall perform their duties without making any findings or expressing any conclusion or recommendation regarding the misconduct of any person, unless such findings or information has already been established through legal proceedings. Further, the commission shall not make any reference in any of its activities or in its report or recommendations to the possible civil or criminal liability of any person or organization, unless it's already been through the done through the court.
Well, you know, Lori, it's interesting because that line was probably written by church lawyers because the church had to approve the TRC. It's, you know, the serial killer appointing the jury. You know, it's incredible.
Shall not name names.
Yep, shall not name names. It says that right there. And remember,
notwithstanding, and then it says, yeah, if a name is, it happens to get named, it will not be recorded.
Imagine a court of law that says any evidence that names a crime by the defendant cannot be put in the court record. I mean, the judge would be tossed off the bench by saying you're helping collude with a suspected criminal. It's what the Crown gets to do all the time. I mean, this is standard procedure that's been passed off as some kind of legal process. So, bringing this, we got in our last 15 minutes here, I wanted to bring it back to what we were talking about a little bit before, and that is when we're talking about using this as a way to get people on board to see, okay, we've got to not worry about these criminal bodies anymore, we've got to leave them, we've got to set up something different. One of the issues we find time and again, but not only with the CAS, there's two issues that people seem really concerned about now. How corrupt things are and how their children are being trafficked, you know, by the CAS or whoever. But also the whole thing of the Canada Revenue, the incredible fraud going on now at all levels, and the outright theft. This is a big issue, especially out west. A lot of the farmers I was speaking to have this. The folks in Alberta are totally riled up about this, and they want to do something about it. So I want to flag those issues in terms of the local people who are listening to this, who are involved with us. Because the other good thing is this week I was talking to a woman in Quebec who said that she's organizing meetings for us to come and speak at, and she's finding dozens of people in Quebec interested as opposed to three or four at a time in Canada, English Canada. And the folks in Quebec are a lot further along. They don't like the Crown. There's a whole sovereignist movement there that wants to split off already, and they have created a great reception for us. There's 30, 40, 50 people waiting to hear me speak in places all around Quebec. So I want to really urge people, if you know French-Canadian speakers in that, we've got to get our stuff translated into French. We've got to make a real push there because there's already a whole group that are waiting for this in Quebec. And I just want to mention that, you know, for folks listening in right now. Go ahead, anybody.
Yeah, Kevin, I also wanted to mention something that happened this week in the mainstream media. It was just another report of what we've always been saying, and just to relate it to the fact that you've been saying this for years, and then the report comes out and kind of confirms it but also denies it at the same time. There's an archdiocese here in Minnesota in the United States, near Minneapolis, a guy named Curtis Meyer, and
right.
He was a priest. You hear about this, he's convicted of 20 felonies against minor children for sexual abuse and child pornography. And in this report, what they found was, of course, the church, instead of doing something about that, even though he was convicted of 20 different counts of sexual abuse, they simply protected him by moving him from location to location to location to allow him to continue to abuse children. And this is the second case of this in particular that I've read about just in the last month. More proof, more evidence.
He's just following orders. That's the policy in the Catholic Church to do that. They're obligated.
Oh, absolutely.
He's been defrocked.
Well, and then, like, I mean, that just shows that, you know, people who want to say, oh, well, there's, you know, there's bad priests, but basically the organization itself, by shuffling, every time one of those priests is shuffled, the shufflers are directly responsible for every child raped at the next location.
Yep, that's absolutely. Right. And for the people that say, well, it's just one or two bad apples, you know, at some point you have to stand back and look at that kind of circular logic and think, every time that happens, it's just another bad apple. How many bad apples are there really? Is it what Pope Francis said, it's just 2%? No, it's every single one of them
that help
to cover up the crimes.
It's 100% because the policy is called crimen solicitanus. People can go to hiddennolonger.com, Appendix 9. You can read the whole policy. If priests don't cover up child abuse, they're excommunicated. That's a criminal conspiracy. It means every American priest is subverting the laws of America. The Catholic Church is advocating domestic terrorism under American law. They are saying, subvert the laws, subvert the child protection laws of America, or you'll be defrocked.
Now, Kevin, I want to ask you, I want to see what you think about this in the last couple of minutes. What about people who say, because we talked about, I mentioned the IRS, I mentioned Canadian Revenue, and how they are kind of these outside crown corporations, they operate outside of the country. Mm-hmm. What about for the churches that essentially don't have to, they don't deal with the government has no jurisdiction over them. When we talk about laws or legalities and these people being held responsible, how does that kind of correlate with laws in the United States or laws in Canada if these people operate in the church outside of those laws in and of themselves? What do you think about that?
In practice, they're a law unto themselves. The governments all over the world especially allow the Catholic Church to operate under their own set of laws. Now, I found that out when I was thrown out of the United Church. The Attorney General of British Columbia said in writing that the internal disciplinary matters in the church are outside the jurisdiction of the ministry, that is, outside the law of Canada. So the church, in practice, is a law unto itself, and that's why every child rapist in the world knows you can get ordained and get away with it. And that's why it's pointless trying to work with these systems, because they're set up to facilitate crime. And now and then, the government and the courts have to take one priest and try him. You know, throw one fish to the crowd and say, yeah, you see, the church is under the law. But that's just a game. It's like when the Pope is coming to visit in September, he's addressing the joint two houses of Congress. The man is a convicted felon. He's the head of a criminal syndicate, and yet here he is coming to the U.S. It's the same collusion that we're talking about.
Yeah, and that specific date, September 24th, maybe that's something we can get into next week, the occult significance of it, because we know these people like dates, numbers, and times.
Yeah, well, do you have anything briefly you can say on that, Ryan?
Well, yeah, I mean, the 24th of September ties in directly with the autumnal equinox and the midway point between that equinox and the solstice for the winter, which is 6 weeks prior to an occult Sabbat called Samhain, which is the origins of All Hallows Mass or Halloween, which was originally convened by the church. The church established that day, and it is a massive time of the year for child sacrifice going back centuries, child and animal human sacrifices. So just as a point, I can get into more detail about it next week, but that's what I can tell you off the top of my head.
Definitely, we will. Anyone else, any comments? We've been saying a lot here, and I just wanted anybody's feedback. Now is your chance.
Well, maybe if anybody has any additional comments about the TRC and about the work that we're doing, maybe ways to help educate people, obviously the information on the website, but if there's any other sources, maybe we can get those out as well, ways other people can help.
Well, like I said, itccs.org and canatarepublic.ca. One of the things that I'm going to be posting on both sites is testimonies of people who sat through these TRC things, like Shauna Baptiste, a Native woman who's confirming everything we're saying, that she witnessed at these events. But the hard evidence showing, and the focus now is not simply on the past, but these crimes today, the child trafficking, the murders going on. I remember, you know, here's one example. The week that I got fired from my church in Port Alberni, there was a Métis woman called Krista Lynn. She helped with her food bank. She was one of the Native people who was bringing these stories out. She got up in my church that Sunday after I was fired, and she said, "You're crucifying Kevin because he knows about the children being trafficked in this valley." They grabbed Krista and literally threw her out the door of that church. Next month, she was found dead of a, quote, drug overdose. And I knew her well. She didn't do drugs. Okay? This was the first of many, many murders that happened to people involved in our movement You know, we know about Bingo Dawson, William Coombs, all the others we talk about, but there's a lot of people whose lives have been snuffed because they dare to look at how this stuff is carrying on today. And we owe it to those people and the children being trafficked tomorrow to do something, not to just go on to the next issue. We've got to devote our lives to defending them and setting up a new system to make sure this stuff doesn't happen. So I just wanted to, you know, say that because it's, we're talking human beings here. We can't lose sight of that.
Absolutely, and it's not just a duty. It's a responsibility that we have, knowing this information, that we have to protect the innocent.
That's right.
Well, I think people need to realize as well that they're actually breaking international law by cooperating with the government and by funding the government with their tax dollars. They are breaking international law.
Yes, and the law of God and the law of just morality.
Basic human decency.
Right. So people say, well, what do we do then? Aren't we going to get victimized if we stop paying taxes? Well, if enough people do it, and we find this, if you do something by yourself, you're more of a target. If you do something as a group, they tend to back off more, and we've found that time and again. So that's why you need to organize with us. Write to us, republicofcanada@gmail.com. And, you know, we're going to be talking about more of that in the future as well.
That sounds good. And also I wanted to ask you, you guys, when you go do and you do your, like, pamphleting, leaflets, and you hang stuff up, are these things that are, like, pre-set up, pre-established, or do you make your own pamphlets to hand out?
They're all pamphlets that we've made up with the Republic.
Okay, good. I wanted to make sure, because for people listening out there, maybe that they can go and they can download, like, a template of whatever the document is, and then they can have that instead of having to make themselves their own.
Right. Well, we did, for example, there's a standing arrest warrant for who we call the Dirty 30. These are the 30 defendants, including Prime Minister Stephen Harper, the heads of these churches, people like Bob Bennett in London, the Anglican bishop. There's arrest warrants. There's kind of wanted posters. There's basic information material we're getting out. And there are going to be a lot of video links we're doing over the next while for people to kind of not only prove what we're saying, but giving them a way to go beyond simply being outraged and saying, okay, we can take back our communities now from these criminals. One of the things I know we talked about in London, too, was Occupy is looking for places to work out of. Well, these churches are not only, they're already taxpayer-supported places, which means you can go in there. They're yours. But they're disestablished. They're forfeited under international law because the revenue of a criminal society is forfeited because it'll be used for criminal purposes. So you can not only go into those churches, but under the law, you can take what's in the collection plate and give it to the poor, and you'd be within your rights. And that opens up incredible possibilities for not only good street theater, but good education moments, and taking back these churches and using them for the homeless, you know, as centers to work out of. I think we've got to start to actively be doing this because we know from experience when we started doing that in Vancouver, and I know Laura can testify to that because she was there that day, the shockwave that sent through the system when we went into the Catholic Mass at Holy Rosary Cathedral, I got a call from the lawyer from the Archbishop the next day pleading for us not to do it again. And they're very sensitive about that, so we really got to pressure the enemy where they're weak. That's right. Then I want to thank everybody for another good, informative show. Be back here again next Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern. Follow our work, CanadaRepublic.ca, and contact us for ideas for the show or feedback or anything at republicofcanada@gmail.com. Thank you all. Carry it on.